Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA junkie, senior reporter, and longtime MMA journalist, Mike Bond. Hope everyone out there is doing very, very well. It is exciting times right now, not only for the show, but in the world of mixed martial arts. I appreciate everyone who tuned in to the last episode that we did with Kayla Harrison, a long time coming down there by the bonfire. I feel like the bar has been set for the show. All things are going to be tough to follow up after that. So happy and so appreciative of Kayla for having us there. I was down there with my boy, the producer of the show, Kamikaze Abi Suban. We did some very, very great work at American Top Team over those few days after UFC 314. I'm sure some of you have already seen some of those interviews come out, a little bit of the extra content we did, but trust, there's still even more good stuff to come from that trip, and I really, really enjoyed that experience. Honestly, a career highlight those few days at American Top Team, and had to take a little bit of a breather after that, a little bit of a relaxation. I thought that show with Kayla was able to keep the channel, keep the feed a little bit alive here, but we are back and we have another great show for you. Of course, just coming off UFC Kansas City, where Ian Machado Gary defeated Carlos Prochas in the main event. We go into UFC Des Moines this weekend, headlined by Davison Figueiredo versus Corey Sandhagen. And of course, the week after, coming up soon, UFC 315 in Montreal. I will be there for MMA Junkie. A lot going on, and to kind of talk about it all, we are going to have the great Dean Thomas back on the show to discuss five things that are on my mind in the world of mixed martial arts. Some notable topics from International Fight Week to Machado Gary's win, Dustin Poirier's retirement fight becoming official, and oh, so much more. So kind of sit back, relax, and listen to me and Dean hit on these five major topics, some other discussion as well. Appreciate Dean always being here on the bonfire. Please make sure to show your support, subscribe, like, thumbs up, comment, anything you can do on whichever platform, audio or video, you are consuming this on. I'm going to take a quick break and we will be right back with Dean Thomas. We are back on the Bonfire Podcast with a very familiar returning guest, is Mr. Dean Thomas. Dean, how are you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm happy. I'm loving life. I'm loving the fight game right now. So let's get it rocking.
Yeah, for sure. I'd hit you with five things we want to talk about today. Obviously, you know, a lot going on in the sport. Had a good event last weekend. Some big stuff coming up. But I feel like the big thing everyone's asking, Dean, that we have to lead it off with for thing one, International Fight Week, UFC 317, is 60 days away, 2 months away from right now. Still without a main event. A very rare move. The UFC's already announced the main event for the pay-per-view after that one with New Orleans and Dustin Poirier. But it's like we still don't have the International Fight Week one. Dana said on Saturday in Kansas City is not going to be Khamzat Chimaev versus Dricus du Plessis. Where do you stand on things right now, Dean?
I'm thinking you have to go Tom Aspinall somewhere in this. Like, you have to. Like, how do you not go the heavyweight champion of the world? Like, he wants to fight in the summer. I'm thinking you have to go Tom Aspinall somewhere. Now, whether that's John Jones, Cyril Gane, Derek Lewis, I don't know which one, but it's got to be Tom Aspinall versus somebody for International Fight Week to kick things off.
Interesting. We hear all the story, like John Jones wants all this time to prepare and everything. Do you think, you know, he's willing to take a fight 2 months from now, or do you think it's looking like Tom might have to defend that interim title if you were to go there?
Tom's gonna have to defend. There's no way John Jones accepts that fight now. But here's the thing, like, he says he needs more time to prepare. I mean, it's not like he didn't know about this for the last 2 years. We knew about this. He knew about this before the Stipe fight that he'd eventually have to fight Tom Aspinall. Like, how has he not been preparing for this if he had any idea in his head that he was going to have this fight? Like, he has to be ready in his head that this was going to happen. So the more and more time that passes, the more and more I think that John is just pulling us along and may not ever take this fight.
It's so weird because you see like the reporting that's kind of coming out, some guys like Ariel Helwani and stuff basically being like, it seems like the UFC met John's number and were willing to give him, whether that was the $30 million or something below her, and then now it's getting delayed again. So does that tell you what you said there? Maybe he's just dragging us all along, and maybe he thought he would price himself out of the fight and now they're willing to meet it, and it's like, oh shit.
Well, that's the problem with fighter leverage. Mm-hmm. As a fighter, you go through so much to get to where you are, wherever that is. And when you can really start to call your own shots, think about all the guys who've had the leverage. And it's only like a few of them, Conor McGregor being one, John Jones being the other. And once they're in a position where they can string you along, they're going to do it. They're going to go, you know what? After all you guys put me through, y'all going to feel this one. And they've put us through it, man. Like John has strung us along. Conor strung us along. And now we got to sit and eat it because we done gave these guys all the leverage. They done got all the cards in their hands.
And you see, I'm sure you saw this graphic that I think has everyone, all the fans particularly, very triggered that, you know, a few different outlets and ESPN put out as well, being like John Jones is now the second longest reigning heavyweight champion in UFC history behind Cain Velasquez. And it's like, man, and they call them undisputed. And it's like, well, it is disputed with an interim title. And I don't know, it feels like a very farcical reign in that regard.
Undisputed. And the longest... The way we can kind of manipulate numbers to make something seem great. I'm not hating. I just got to call it like it is. Mike, I always got to call it like it is. I'm not hating. I love John. I think he is the greatest of all time. But it don't last forever. Like, your reign doesn't last forever. And then when it's over, you can kind of massage the numbers to make them seem greater. And that's exactly what we're doing here. We're manipulating these stats and the situation and the narrative to make it seem better than it is. But the reality is, come on, man, you know. I mean, he fought Stipe, and then he fought, and he got the title from Ciryl Gane, who was deathly afraid of him. So he hasn't been on this run of heavyweights of where he's been tearing guys up.
Yeah, so how confident are you, do you think they pick up that phone and call Tom and be like, we're in a tough spot here. We need someone to want to do this. Cause you saw, I mean, they just put out a video blog, I think this morning or last night, with Tom's dad talking a fair bit in it, being like, I'm sick of this situation. Like, it's annoying me. We have such a great fighter here who needs to be fighting. We're wasting his prime, all this stuff. And then Tom came out and said he's actually been sick since like December, and this time off has actually been somewhat good for him. So I don't really know where we are, where we're going, but Dana did say, you know, he's very confident still this fight's happening. I can't imagine it happens in 2 months. So I don't know. Like, what do you think? There's obviously the one we're all wondering about is Ilya Topuria versus Islam Makhachev. Is that going to be the main event, or is Islam going to defend against maybe a Justin Gaethje or something?
Well, to me, for International Fight Week, I think you have to go. If you were going that Makhachev route, if you went the Makhachev route, I think you'd have to go Ilya. It just seems like a more of an international thing.
Yeah.
Now, if they wanted to sit on that fight and put it somewhere else, I mean, there's a lot of other pay-per-view cards you could put that fight on. You can go Justin Gaethje, but for me, International Fight Week seems like you'd put Ilya Topuria and Makhachev in that. I don't know if it tastes the same as a Tom Aspinall fight, even though it's a great fight, but there's just something about heavyweights that you just feel like need to kind of headline things, and I feel like that would be. Still put Tom in there, but if you're going to go Makhachev on International Fight Week, you kind of have to go Ilya Topuria, I believe. And that's an option.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to at least be the front runner. I mean, you hear the reporting and like the talking to Ilya's team, and he said, you know, they all say he's fighting on that card. It's just, is he going to be fighting Islam for the undisputed belt, or maybe like Charles Oliveira for a vacant title because Islam might move up or something like that? But there's no way we're waiting 2 more weeks, right, to see what happens between Bilal Muhammad and Jack Del Maddalena. Is the International Fight Week main event really hinging on what happens in this Bilal Muhammad fight?
Is that possible? And why would, but here's my thing though. Islam is being a little hypocritical here. Like, how is he so adamant about moving up to welterweight, but not willing to give another featherweight an opportunity? Like, it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
He's done it a few times already. He has the lightweight title defense record. It's not like it's kind of done willy-nilly, right? I think maybe that's seeing is the difference. He's just, I feel like the team, and again, I feel like people need to be more fair to Islam. He has not said personally, like, I won't fight Ilya Topuria. I don't want to do it for this reason. It's all the managers or Habib or all these people. We've yet to hear from the man himself.
Yeah, that is true. But I mean, at the end of the day, Who knows? I don't know how his camp operates. Normally the fighter has to say, but he seems to be a little bit more willing to allow Habib and them to kind of run his career And I could imagine him saying, no, you're not taking this fight. And he'd have to be like, all right, you're right. Normally it's the other way around. Fighters are like, I don't care. I'll take the fighter. I'm not doing this fight. And that's the way it works. But I think Islam is a little bit more of a team player when it comes to his team.
Yeah. So I guess sitting here, if you had to put your money on it, what do you think is the headliner of UFC 317?
If I had to put my money on it, I think they convinced Tom Aspinall to fight Ciryl Gane.
Okay, that's.
I think if I had to put my money on it, I think that's the one that's being this far out. Like we're a couple weeks away, and
it's 2 months.
Yeah, we're 2 months out, and I think that they'll throw a number. Like Tom wants to fight, and he'll be like, "All right, I'll fight." And I think they'll throw a number at Ciryl Gane. It won't be ideal for him, but they'll throw a number that he can't refuse, and he'll have to take it. And I think it makes more sense that way.
And I mean, it could be if John Jones just needs a little more convincing, like Tom Aspinall hasn't headlined a UFC pay-per-view yet. He's being co-main event in like his two fights there. You know, you put him in that International Fight Week spot. He goes out there, maybe he beats Ciryl in a more devastating fashion than John did. And then you get the mic saying, you know, I just headlined the biggest card of the year, International Fight Week, beat the guy's ass who, you know, better than you did, come fight me.
Well, and that too, John is a chess player. You got to think about this. He's a very intellectual chess player. And he's trying to collect as much information on Tom Aspinall as possible. Exactly. We haven't really seen him in a lot of tough spots. We don't know how he's going to respond to that. And I think John is probably waiting on that. And it's fair. It's a fair thing to do because when you look at even the fight this past weekend with like Carlos Prates, I mean, we saw some holes, right? Like he lost the fight. And we saw some weight because prior to this, my man, unless you go back to his losses early in his career, he looked unbeatable. He was sniping everybody. But now you can look at this fight against Ian Garry and say, okay, there are some opportunities where he could lose. And that's probably what John is looking for with Tom Aspinall. You know, give him a couple more fights, man. I want some more information before I say yes to this. So I think that with a fight against Ciryl Gane, he's probably expecting Ciryl Gane to fight him a little tougher to put Tom in some spots. Then John can make some assessments on whether he wants to fight him or not.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I feel like I know they're working hard at the UFC offices to get this done here. So hopefully this isn't dated by the time the show comes out. And or maybe for the sake of everyone, we do get an announcement and you can listen to our banter here nonetheless. But we'll move on, Dean, because who knows, this could be dated very quickly here. But on to one that won't be dated. Thing two here, Dustin Poirier's retirement fight is official for UFC 318, July 19th in New Orleans. Brings the UFC back to Louisiana for the first time in 10 years, and it is Max Holloway as the retirement fight opponent. Dean, you and I spoke about this a couple months ago on the show. We were talking about, will it be Ilya for Dustin? Like, what makes sense? You made the comment, which got a lot of attention, saying, don't fight in your hometown for your retirement fight in the UFC because they'll get you killed.
They had my head on that one too, boy. The UFC had my head on that one.
Hey, I mean, you haven't been proven wrong. Look what just happened to Anthony Smith. I know not his hometown, there's a proven track record of
close
this.
Close enough to his hometown, right? Close enough.
I mean, isn't undeniable. You just had the guts to come out and say it.
Yeah, but here's the thing. In this situation is a little bit different. And we got to also commend Dustin Poirier for this unprecedented situation here. This is unprecedented where a man, I don't think the UFC had any intention of going back to New Orleans.
No.
Anytime soon. And for Dustin to have the career that he's had and the leverage that he has. Now, I talked about leverage earlier, and most of the times when fighters have leverage, they use it in an evil way to string us along. Dustin actually used his leverage in a good way to give New Orleans a pay-per-view event. And he's gotten an opponent that is very fair to him. Now, I said, the UFC they set you up to get you killed. That's not the case here. Mm-hmm. Dustin made this happen. I don't know how much influence he had in terms of logistically, but his career allowed for this to happen. That the UFC had so much respect for Dustin that they were willing to listen and say, okay, we'll put a show in your area. And they're putting a pay-per-view in his area and giving him an opponent that we can all appreciate that has so much into it, so many stakes into it. This gives Max Holloway a chance to win, and because he's got two on Max, this gives Max a chance to win. Then this also gives Dustin an opportunity to walk away with the BMF belt, and this is something that will really encapsulate his entire career, because Dustin was a BMF his entire career. And if he could walk away with that belt, come on, man. I mean, this is storybook. This is unprecedented activity here. And I love every bit of it.
It is a very cool story. I mean, Dustin gave me the great quote in the interview we did that came out like right after the fight was announced, you know, saying like, I was Max's first fight in the UFC and he's going to be my last in the UFC. It is the longest spanning trilogy in UFC history, like 13 years and 6 months and 15 days or something between the first fight and the third fight. I think the longest one besides that was like 9 years, and that was Charles Oliveira and Nick Lentz.
If you remember that.
Very random trilogy we had.
So, I actually cornered Nick Lentz in Brazil against Charles Oliveira. Nick had some moments in that fight too, man. I was like, come on, Nick, you got him. Then he got him.
That's probably the most random trilogy in UFC history. In fact, those guys fought three times. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, so you do like the opponent, you think, and Dustin told me he wanted, like, his 1A choice was the Justin Gaethje trilogy. He thought it made all the sense. His number two choice would have been Ilya. And he said Max was a blindside, but he met all the criteria in terms of being a legendary opponent and all that stuff, so he was okay with it.
I don't think it's a blindside. I mean, maybe initially he thought that, but then when you really look at the situation, it's the perfect fight for him. Yeah. It really is. Like I said, he gets an opportunity to walk away with a BMF belt. It gives Max the opportunity to erase those losses, to get one back on Dustin. And then also, when you look at the landscape of the lightweight division, like, both of these guys are kind of in limbo in a way. I mean, when you talk about Justin, Justin's like, Justin Gaethje could be like, hey, man, listen, give me a title shot, and I wouldn't be mad at it. Yeah. And you look at Ilya Topuria, does it really make sense for Ilya Topuria to fight Dustin Poirier? I mean, they don't have a lot of history. So, like, why? There's nothing involved in that. And then for Max, like, what do you do with Max at this point? There's only one other fight that's kind of interesting for Max, and that would probably be Dan Hooker. He's probably hurt right now. So, to me, these are the perfect dance partners for a fight that I think we are all going to enjoy in New Orleans.
Yeah. Is it, I do like everything you said about Max. The upside's great. Get those two back. He doesn't want to be the old, you know, weird spot of being the guy who went 0-3 in two different UFC trilogies. That would be kind of a weird thing on his legacy to have. But yeah, like, I feel like if he loses, he's really kind of boxed in here, right? Because he moved up to lightweight, the fresh start, like, had his final chance with Ilya, didn't go his way, and then Ilya follows him right up there and is kind of like cutting him.
Like, oh.
So if he loses this one, you're like, wow, you just lost twice to a featherweight and then to a guy who's retired. And I think that's kind of scary for his future.
Well, it might be, but man, that's the game, though.
Yeah.
You know, no one has promised the storybook ending. Mm-hmm. In fact, it normally ends the other way. It's normally a nightmare. The ending of careers are nightmares. Mm-hmm. And this could be a nightmare for him. It's going to be a nightmare for one of them.
Yeah.
And looking into what's at stake and how it's all kind of following Dustin's plan, it seems like it's more likely to be a storybook for Dustin and a nightmare for Max.
Yeah.
Just the way the universe and MMA universe works. Like, it's all lining up for Dustin to have to ride off into the sunset and for us to appreciate him and his career based on what he's done, but also kind of culminating to this event. And for Max, it might not be good. It might not work out for him.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. What do you think? Should this be, especially if Dustin wins, should he retire with that BMF belt? Like, should this be the last BMF fight if Dustin Poirier wins?
I think so, only because the BMF belt is so limited. Everybody wants to fight for it, but because it's kind of been in the hands of lightweights, welterweights, it's you really alienate a lot of people who should fight for it. Who could fight for it. So it's like, all right, so what are we doing with this? And to be honest with you, Mike, man, the game ain't really full of BMFs like it used to be. Right. You know, now we got a bunch of athletes lobbying for money and money fights. We don't got a lot of BMFs like we used to have. So I think they should just do away with it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. This is definitely like the end of an era for this lightweights. I mean, like the Eddie Alvarez, Dustin Poirier, Anthony Pettis era, like those guys.
Yeah,
are all
we've gotten rid of all the real tough guys, man. The guys that would fight you for nothing. Mm-hmm. They're not out there like, oh man, I need this, I need that. They fight you for nothing, and we've kind of killed them in the game. So if they retire the BMF belt with Dustin, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, me too. Okay, on to thing three here, Dean. The welterweight division, very interesting right now, especially coming off the back of Ian Machado Gary's win over Carlos Prochus this past weekend. So much going on here to kind of run through. He says he is going to be the backup for the title fight in less than 2 weeks at UFC 315. Dana White confirmed that. A bold move to, yeah, go straight there. He will be the backup. So, yeah, like, I'm sure Shavkat Rakhmonov, Sean Brady have some thoughts on that, but just because he's the backup doesn't necessarily mean 100% he will get the winner, but he says that was part of the promise for taking this fight on short notice. So I don't know, like, what do you make of all this? Do you think Ian's the right guy, or is, you know, Shavkat and Sean going to be getting screwed over here a little?
Yeah, they would be getting screwed over, but hey, fortune favors the bold, though. I will say that. Mm-hmm. And first, I want to give props to Ian Machado Gary for taking the fight in the first place. I thought it was a very dangerous fight for him to take, especially on short notice, to really step up and fight a guy that no one really wanted to fight, or everybody at least wanted to see in trouble at least once. And Ian went up there and did his thing, man. And I thought he fought very well, very tactically. And then even when it got rough in the end, he still found a way to hold on to his lead and ride off with the W. But I can see why he would be the backup for Montreal, because he's willing to do it.
Yeah.
He's willing to do it. That's why he's the backup. I'm sure if they had choices, I'm sure if they was like, all right, guys, if we knew before, like, I'm surprised they didn't call Sean Brady before and said, hey, man, listen, we can have you be the backup. But I think because Ian is so willing to do it, they're going to give him a little bit of love here and say, all right, you can be the backup. But I don't think that, and especially based on the performance against Carlos Prates, that he should probably be next in line for a title. Now, while I said I thought he fought, you know, valiantly, and I thought he fought well, and I don't think that performance still warranted him an opportunity to fight for the belt next, especially after you just lost to a dude who's up for it.
Yeah.
How you going to be the back? How you going to fight for it when you just lost to the guy who's up for it? Who was supposed to fight this time?
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time we've seen a situation like that, but yeah, it feels like this division is just too stacked, and there's too many guys that have, like, you know, on this great winning streak or great record, or coming off a more highly ranked win than he is at this point. I mean, like, obviously Sean Brady's beating Leon Edwards the way he does has more value than Ian beating Prochus the way he did. So we'll see what the decision they make. I mean, what did you make of that fifth round with Ian and Prochus there? Like, do you think that just kind of Ian got a bit tired, got hit with a good shot? Did you take anything more away from that than, like, kind of just a moment of adversity?
What I took away from that is that, you know, I feel bad for Carlos, his next opponent.
Yeah, for real.
You know, I think Carlos might have underestimated Ian a little bit in the first couple of rounds, and it got away from him. Mm-hmm. And then when he really started to turn it on, we saw what he's capable of doing. And I think that had Ian did that in the second round, like, take the first round to collect his data, and then turn it on in the second round, I think Ian might have been in trouble. So my biggest takeaway in that fight is Carlos's next opponent is probably going to have a rough night, going to have a long night. But in terms of Ian Gary, he's good, man. He's a good fighter. He's a good brand for the sport. But he's got holes, though. I still believe he's got some holes. I love his confidence. I love the way he fights, as confident as he does. But, you know, this is going to sound weird. He's a really good fighter, and he's a really confident fighter. But I don't think he's as good as his confidence warrants.
Right.
So I don't think he beats – he might beat – I don't even know if he beats Jack, honestly. I don't know if he beats any of the guys in the main event this weekend. But he's good. We'll just see. We'll see what his future holds for him. I don't think he fights for the title next, though.
No, I don't either, unless, you know, the UFC really did make him this promise. And hopefully if they did, they at least keep their word on that regard.
Promise ain't nothing if it's just a word.
It's not.
Said nothing. You know what I'm saying? I didn't say where the paperwork at.
Yeah, exactly.
Show me the paperwork. I didn't say nothing.
I mean, dude could not be any more confident, though, as you said. I mean, his three-fight plan that he laid out after this at the press conference, saying that he thinks he's going to beat Bilal Muhammad, who he predicted will win, and then he will welcome Islam Makhachev up to welterweight and beat him to become number one pound for pound. And then his second title defense, he said he'll beat Shavkat and avenge that loss. So very ambitious stuff if he pulled that off, my God.
And I'm going to tell you like this, man, for the current state of MMA, we need a guy like that.
100%.
He is so good for MMA right now. The fact that he's talks the way he does and he's willing to prove it. He's willing to prove it. I want more guys like this. We need more guys like Ian Machado Gary that'll talk the talk and at least attempt to walk the walk. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love every bit of it. In a way, I'm Sean Brady's guy, right? But in a way, I'm rooting for Ian Gary to do well, because I think guys like that need to be rewarded.
Totally. Yeah, we need people like him in the sport. And I mean, I know I just mentioned that, like him laying out that plan, it sounds crazy and ambitious and maybe a little delusional, but go look at some Conor McGregor press conference videos from early in his rise. You know, when he said for the first time in a press conference, I'm going to box Floyd Mayweather after this, everyone thought he was like, fucking.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah. And look what happens. So there is an element of, you know, speaking out and, you know, making your truth come to reality. And we've seen that work out well for some guys, but you're just, if it doesn't go your way, you set yourself up for a tough fall from grace, and the fans in the sport can be very mean.
I don't know. They're brutal. They're brutal when you have a little confidence and can't meet it. They're brutal.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think, just to close the door on welterweight here, Kamaru Usman versus Joaquin Buckley in the UFC Atlanta main event? That definitely plays a factor in things here. Like, I know Buckley was at one point discussed for maybe fighting for the title in Montreal before they went with Jack. So, like, he's right there. And Usman, I know it's a long time off the 3-fight losing streak, but if he can go get a quality win, his name value, the history with Bilal, the whole podcast, unreleased podcast incident they had, all that stuff. There's still storylines for Kamaru. And I think if he wins, he's right back to being relevant in the title picture.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about that. I've worked with Kamaru on the desk a few times, mm-hmm. and I really like him. I really like him. I like working on the desk with him. I like his attitude. And I'm really rooting for him to do well. I just don't know, man. You know, like I said, this MMA game is brutal. And people think I'm just a hater. I'm not a hater, man. I just know how brutal it is. And for as much as I'd like to see Kamaru go out there and do good things, I just don't know if he has the knees. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if he has the knees to do it. And initially, when I first saw the matchup, I said, man, I like Kamaru in this. And then I started thinking about it. I'm like, wait a minute. What am I saying to myself? Like, did I not see Joaquin Buckley do what he did to an aging Colby Covington? And Joaquin Buckley, he moves well. He's fast. He's aggressive. He's more than anything else hungry for the opportunity, hungry to show what he could do. Now, you got a guy like Kamaru Usman who's not really that hungry because he's already been fed. He ate already. He's just trying to get seconds. So, and he's older. I don't know, man. To be honest with you, I don't know. I'm hoping that he can go out there and put up a good fight, but I don't know. I don't see it.
Yeah, it's a tough one for sure, and Buckley's looking real good, but who knows if Usman, there's so many things you could look back closely, like he looked really good, I thought, on short notice in the Khamzat fight. You can make an argument he should have won the third Leon fight. It was close, especially with the point deduction stuff.
He won the third fight against Leon for sure.
And of course, you know, he was beating Leon pretty good up until that head kick. So it's like it's not as bad as it looks on paper, but like you said, all the tread on those tires is just, you can never put it back on, and those knees are in a rough spot.
And you don't get younger, and you get older exponentially as time goes on. Like, it's exponential. And the time off might have hurt him. I don't know. It might have helped him. It might have hurt him. We're going to have to find out. But it normally doesn't work out well.
Yeah, it's just the way the sport goes, man. I mean, look at like that clip. I know it kind of went viral a little bit from their podcast with Israel Adesanya, where they're all like laughing that they've lost 3 straight, and mm-hmm. they're out there, and you're like, these are some of like the legends and the greatest fighters in the history of our sport. But to kind of see them all sitting in that room and being in like a relatable phase of their careers was an interesting thing to see for sure.
So I was with Tyron throughout his whole run, the good and the bad. When Usman did him in, Colby Covington did him in, Gilbert Burns, Vicente Luque, and I was with him. And all these guys was in the back laughing and having a good time. And I told myself, oh, y'all just wait. It's come. Just wait. Just wait. And it hit them. Look at them now. I said, just wait. And now here they, now they in the same spot.
Yeah. I mean, this transitions perfectly into thing four here. I mean, Anthony Smith has his final fight on Saturday. Obviously, like, I think it was good and cathartic and, like, gave him the closure after everything that happened in December, losing his coach and his good friend. Like, the emotions of the walkouts between the two fights could not have been any more different. But when you look back at this, the way the fight went and everything, like, besides him getting one last paycheck, was there any value in having this final fight?
No, I wish... For our sakes as fans, I wish he just went out swinging and just got knocked out cold.
Right.
And just went out trying to really win hard. And maybe got tired in the process or just knocked out cold in the process. But it just I don't like when on guys their last fight just don't have a lot of energy or enthusiasm. And like he didn't really like he had a lot of enthusiasm. Like he, you could tell he was enjoying the process and the moment of it being his last fight, but it, yeah. I don't think he really enjoyed it being his last fight.
Yeah.
And I wish we had saw that, but it's hard because when you have 50 fights, like how do you really get up for it? Like you don't really get up for it. It's hard. Like he was in a tough spot of even taking this. Now he couldn't say no to the paycheck and the opportunity to do it one more time. But the opportunity to do it that last time, I wish he had really just went out and was like, you know what? Like, he shouldn't even have trained. Honestly, he shouldn't even have trained. He should have just said, you know what? I'm just going to go out there and just start throwing blows and just see what happens. And then just went out like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what he said he wanted to do. When I spoke to him before, he's like, I just want to like let my hands go and fight on the instinct and everything. I have no idea, like in those brief exchanges that did happen, if he felt he was doing that to a degree that he can make peace with. But obviously the ending wasn't the way, but.
Well, he might have thought he was doing that. That's the thing though. Like in his head, like in the moment, like looking back, he's going like, that's not what I thought I was doing. But he, in his head, he might have thought he was doing that, but it's not. That's not the reception I got from it. The reception I got from it was like, you know, he was pitter-patting, and then when he got elbowed in the head, it just started to deteriorate. But I wanted to see him just go out and just like bite down on his, as we say in England, gum shield.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely honored him in a great way, though, after this fight. I mean, he got like the video package, the Jelly Roll song and everything. I'd love to see the UFC do this for like all the retiring fighters, but I know some people are like, this was a lot for Anthony Smith, but I feel like internally, and you can probably speak to this, like his work on the desk, all those things, he seemed to be very loved.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. I actually was a part of that package for him. And, you know, he's loved in the, it's actually kind of special when he would fight, because everybody at ESPN would be so nervous and they'd be so concerned about him. And they would be like, man, I hate that he fights. I want him to retire. They wanted him to retire like a year ago. They was like, they couldn't wait for him to retire. And every time he fought, they would be so nervous and so concerned. And I think they're actually really happy now that they don't have to go through his fight weeks and anymore. So.
How do you like, can you give us some context, Dean? How hard is it to let go after retiring? Your final fight was 12 years ago this month, April 2013. You know, we see it, how much fighters struggle. Like, can you kind of give us some context for someone like Anthony, how tough it is to ultimately, you know, depart yourself from being active?
To me, it wasn't that hard. I knew right away. And again, I was fighting in different times where it wasn't. So I didn't know, like, the opportunities for us wasn't as high. Like, it wasn't like if I knew I could do this, that I'd be set for life. Like, some of these guys are set for me. It was like, all right, eventually I'm going to have to get a job anyway. So, so I better start thinking about different things that I want to do in life. So for me, it wasn't very difficult to retire, but I've had to coach a lot of other fighters through retirement, and it's hard for them because their entire identity has always revolved around them being a fighter. So that's why they take everything so personally. So it's why when I say something about their fight, they take it personally because their identity is attached to them being a fighter. So I coach fighters through it all the time. Like, man, listen, we have to now find a different way for you to live your life. And some fighters have done it pretty well and some haven't. I remember talking to Joseph Benavidez, like he wouldn't train. He couldn't even go into a gym for years because he had to separate himself from the fight game in that manner. And I recommend that too. Right. Like when you retire, stay out of the gym, just stay out of it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense for sure. And I guess just last thing on Anthony, like how do you even contextualize like a legacy of someone like his? I mean, at the end of the day, you look at the UFC record, it's 13-12. He fought for the title, you know, obviously very admirable that he didn't take the DQ against John Jones, but there's been a lot of ups and downs, you know, never won more than three straight in the UFC, like, but was obviously a guy who they could rely on for short notice to headline cards. Like he had a lot of value, but if you're talking about like some of the greatest fighters in UFC history, obviously the record represents he would
not. So I think Anthony and I have very similar type legacies that we're going to leave. And it's not solely associated with what we did inside the cage. And I think that's important to note is that our entire footprint on the game is our legacy in terms of like, for me, you know, having mentored so many different fighters, like not only just fought, but mentoring different fighters and coaching different fighters. And then my work as an analyst, and that I think that's really what my legacy is, as opposed to what I've done. Cause some people don't even realize that I fought. and I think Anthony's going to be a very similar situation. Like it's new and fresh to us now to think of him as a fighter, but in 3 years, we won't even be thinking of him as a fighter. He's going to be the analyst.
Sure.
He's going to be the guy that talks. And some people won't even recognize him as a fighter. And I think that when we look back, like when his legacy is all said and done, we're going to remember him as the culmination of his entire career of this tough journeyman who scratched and clawed his way into a title fight, but then has done such a good job on the other side in front of the camera talking about fighting.
Yeah, I think those are great words. And, you know, like if you look at his earlier career, how quickly he was cut from the UFC the first time, like if you put it all in a bubble, you could say he overachieved.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about that.
The limitations.
He's overachieved and didn't even have a lot of resources to be a good fighter.
Exactly.
Yeah, he kind of did it on his own. So that's special in itself.
Yep, that's the career of some of these guys for sure. So we appreciate all the time from Anthony and all the fights and all that stuff. And we will be seeing much more of him, I'm sure, on the desk, on the broadcast, probably on these podcasts and such as well. But last thing here, Dean, as we get ready for UFC Des Moines on Saturday, big, I guess, month coming up, starting from this for the bantamweight division, the title UFC 316 between Merab Dvalishvili and Sean O'Malley. Where do you think the winner of this main event on Saturday between Corey Sandhagen and Davidson Figueiredo fits into the title picture at 135?
I like it. Honestly, I really do. Especially if it's Figgy. Because he hasn't had an opportunity up there yet. And if he can beat somebody like Corey Sandhagen, why not? Why not? Like Corey Sandhagen has had a couple opportunities to show his stuff, and he still deserves another one. There's no doubt about that. But I do feel as though the winner of this should get a crack at it. I think that they're both good, and Figgy hasn't had a crack at it like that. And I think that with a good win, especially if it's exciting, and both guys are really dynamic. Both guys have the ability to do something great inside the octagon. And I think that if they do something great inside the octagon, not only do they deserve it, but I think they should call for it to really get the fans behind that.
Yeah. It feels like a great case for both of them. I mean, they both have the advantage of neither of them have fought Merab or O'Malley. Right. I mean, you know, you look at Piotr Jan, like he just beat Figueiredo, but he's lost to both guys already. So like, I know Piotr's got his support and all that stuff, but he's not the fresh guy. So yeah, I think winner of this definitely has a very good chance, but I'm more curious, Dean, about the title fight, what you think is going to happen, because when we did our start of the year champion show, you said you thought Merab was going to beat Umar. You nailed it, but you said he thought he was going to lose the title this year. So does he lose to Sean O'Malley, and maybe we get a trilogy right away. So like none of these guys matter, but I don't know. Do you think this is the one where he loses, or is Merab going to win this? And maybe he fights the winner of this weekend's main event at the end of the year and loses.
I think Merab wins this one too. Yeah, I think. When I look back at the first fight against Sean O'Malley, I thought Sean was better on the ground than what he showed. I thought he was better. And he didn't do well on the ground against Merab. Like, his jiu-jitsu didn't hold up. And that was a problem for me, because I thought, like, if he got taken down, that his jiu-jitsu would hold up a little better. And it didn't hold up. And I don't know within this amount of time that he can do differently for his jiu-jitsu to really hold up if he gets taken down.
How much of that do you think was related to the injury? Because he said he had the messed up hip, and I think he did like some interviews last week when the fight was announced, and he's like, I've already done more grappling training 10 weeks out than I did the entire camp.
I hope so. I hope that was the case. I hope that, because if you have a bad hip, then okay, your jiu-jitsu game, especially off the bottom, is gone. It's completely gone. So there is some validity to that. So if that's the case, then I give him credit for that. So I'll give him a little bit more of a chance. But if that's not the case, if he can't do better on the ground in terms of his movement and his leg work and just being able to hold off Merab a little bit better, if he gets taken down, he don't stand a chance.
Does Merab deserve any of the same criticisms people were giving Alex Pereira before his fight? This dude is cage side at every single UFC event, no matter where it is. It seems like he's there with cornering. Like, I'm sure, you know, he's training, he's working hard, all that kind of stuff. But like, you know, we talked about it with Alex Pereira, this guy being everyone. Does Merab deserve any comment on that, or is it not going to become a thing until maybe he loses?
It's never a thing until it's a thing, but I don't think it's a thing at all. I mean, he lives in Vegas. I always see him at the apex. He's at the apex. Sure. To me, it speaks to their dedication to the fight game. It's not like he's there drinking and partying. Like, he's just there watching and supporting his friends, or just watching. And I don't think it's a problem. I think it's actually good for his career that he's there. I mean, I'd much rather see him there than in some damn soccer game, you know, clowning around, you know, goofing off. So I think it's good. I think and you know what else is good to me? It seemed, I know this is probably not very ideal to be a good citizen, but I love the fact that he's willing to fight fans.
Yeah,
I like it.
He's willing to fight.
That's my point. He's not discriminating who he's ready to throw hands on. So I like it. Yeah. I just saw a clip of him jumping over the little barrier at the arena, going up to step into a dude who was trying him. I like it, because he's man, listen, you talk trash, you can get it too. And he treats everybody the same, whether it is a fan or a fighter. And I like it.
He does, yeah. The impulse control is not there much for Merab, even when it comes to protecting himself. Mm-hmm. As we know, it's for better or worse, he'll cut himself open, he'll jump headfirst into a lake. We know all the goofy Merab stories, but nevertheless, Dean, before I let you go here, just I didn't include this one on my list of things, but you're obviously headed to Des Moines this weekend to corner Jillian Robertson, my fellow Canadian, who's fighting Marina Rodriguez. This feels like Jillian's biggest fight yet. Do you kind of get that?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is an important fight for her, in terms of putting her name in that conversation for a title. This is the moment where she can show everybody that she's ready for it. And I think it's good for her. Timing is right on this. Timing is right. I spoke about it earlier with other fighters. It's sometimes like your timing, that's the end of it. But I think the timing is right for her. Like, she's had some losses that were good for her to let her know where she needs to work. It wasn't right for her. But now the timing is right. I think she's got a really tough, gritty opponent to fight. But I think the timing is right for her. And I'm looking forward to it on Saturday. I'm not. Sometimes I used to get nervous for her fights, because I knew, I was like, I don't know about this. But I'm really excited for her to go out and showcase her skills and then call out the next person. And I think if she can get one more in a good way, I think she could be fighting Weili Zhang afterwards.
Yeah, please. I mean, the strawweight division is begging for something interesting, a new face, something like that. And I think Jillian would be a very fascinating contender there. And feels like it's all being done the right way now, right? Like, I feel like something you really emphasized with her earlier on was just like fight as much as you can, which she did. She was very active. But I assume with strawweight and the weight cuts, and as you move higher up in the rankings, it all gets more tactical now in terms of the
career. Yeah, it does. But the way we train, man, we train for her skill set to just constantly keep improving, to be better every time. Because I noted, and I said, you know what? Everybody you fight is going to try to avoid the takedown. So we have to be better. We just have to be prepared for that and be better. And I don't think she really was bought into that early. She was like so desperate. Like, I have to get the takedown to win. But that's not the case anymore. That's not the case anymore. It's not that you have to do any, you don't have to do anything. You got many ways to win. So let's just see what they, yep. Let's just see what opportunity presents itself, and we're going to attack it from there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Continue to see the rise. We need a Canadian UFC
champion. Well, because them men over in Canada right now, I don't know what is going on with the fellas. What's going on with the fellas in Canada right now?
I don't know. We'll have to see. I mean, I think our highest ranked hope is Ayman Zahabi, and he's obviously got a big spot against Jose Aldo coming up.
Well, at listen, you can always count on Jillian Robertson and Jasmine Jazdavicius to hold it down for Canada.
Yeah, let's go. We got both of them coming up here. All right, Dean. Well, I know you got some other stuff to do before you head out to Des Moines, so I very much appreciate the time and you being back here on the Bonfire. Make sure everyone follows this man on social media and, of course, his great work on the UFC broadcast, ESPN, the podcast, everything you do, Dean. You are a credit to the sport, so I appreciate you being here. Again, I will take a quick break and be right back.
All right, my man. Peace.
And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you once again to Dean for his time. Always appreciate him being here. Definitely a routine guest on the show at this point, but it's been a couple months since we spoke. A lot going on. And of course, as I mentioned, those comments he made about Dustin Poirier's retirement fight and the opponent and all that stuff. Had to circle back and get his opinion now that it was booked. Appreciate everyone for tuning in to this week's episode. Everyone have a very nice week. Relax, enjoy yourself, be safe. And then until next week, we will see you back here by the Bonfire.